I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. My name is Paul E. And we certainly don't want to start off with controversy, right, Peter? So I wouldn't do that. But you know what I was laughing about when these guys were walking in? And by the way, if you're new or you're coming back, welcome home. You're off the hook. And I don't care how many times you bounced in and out of this asylum, you're home. And let us love you back to life. And that's the way it works, because we're all going to take our last drink or drug at some point in time. And hopefully you've had it if you're sitting here. But I was laughing what James was saying. In this church, there's no liquids allowed. Is that what you were saying?
Correct.
Well, today in the paper, they had this thing, powdered alcohol has just been approved in New York State. So if you told me that, next week I'd be here selling the powder out back. Just another form of income stream. That's just what I thought of. And by the way, your friend Russell,
yes,
who gets most of his material from me, he called me up today. He's in New York doing something, spreading the disease there. And just to put it in proper perspective, just to clarify three things, James. Number one, he doesn't have 6 months less than me. He has 11 months less than me. That's just number one. Number two, the real sad thing for Russell, most of the real information was given out in those 11 months, which I told him today. And then thirdly, and if this fits for you and or anyone else in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you have a problem with drugs, you're probably still taking them. So having said all that, now we're going to give a message of hope and love and joy. Because I got enough, half the people hate me already. Who cares? I really don't have an issue with that. I like to laugh in case you didn't figure that out yet. And when I say I'm off the hook, I really am off the hook. And I came in here destitute, desperate, despicable, disgraceful, disgusting, disapproved, disavowed, disconnected, disproportionate, and diseased. Wow, I like that. This thing we have here, you know, it's like in the mob they say this thing and our thing and that thing, and this thing is the thing, okay? And if you're trying to stop the downward cycle, whatever is causing the downward cycle, well, if you're here, I'm going to make an assumption, a word I don't like to use, but probably booze and or drugs has something to do with it. So you've got a room full of people that are in the same boat. And just for the record, the original name that they wanted to give the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous was The Way Out. This is The Way Out. The reason they couldn't name it that, there were five other books that had that name. Because I study this. I love this thing. This is my life. Why wouldn't I study it? Gave me a life. I love it. I embrace it. And I want more of it. And like Ray Allen, my sponsor, always said to me, there's no end to the good. And the best is yet to come. And I've only touched the tip of the iceberg, so I keep suiting up and showing up. And I can't get enough. The same way as when I was out there. I couldn't get enough. And I haven't had enough here yet. So in case you have a hearing problem, I'm from New York City. And I ran and roared in the 60s. You know, I don't even like to say that too much anymore, because I was doing a meeting somewhere a couple of weeks ago, and the young kids were there, and two of them came up and they said, you know, you're about my grandfather's age. It doesn't really, you didn't think that's funny. I think that's tragic. I don't feel like a grandfather. You show me 30-year-old women, I don't act like a grandfather. And I don't really want to be a grandfather, except I'm going to be a real grandfather. So anyway, putting that to the side, I had a terrible, I had a great childhood. I'm from the 60s, that whole deal. And in 65, the Beatles came to Shea Stadium. We all went to see them, because I'm from Queens in New York. And I woke up 15 years later. That's my story. That's the first step. We went over that last week. Doesn't matter how many times you've been arrested, if you've been arrested, how many of these funny farms you've been in, The bottom line is, if you beat, you beat. Give it up. You know, cry uncle, say help, do whatever you got to do to unconditionally say that I can't do this anymore. And if there's anything that I see that is in any way missing today, it's the gift of desperation. And I not only did I have it when I got here, but I'm so grateful that I have it today. I want this whole deal. And then I found out many years after my sponsor told me, be grateful you have the gift of desperation, I found out that was G-O-D, which is really what the whole program's about. And if you have a problem with God, and there's going to be a lot of talk about God from this point forward, because that's really what the program is about. So if you have a problem with it, you can go out there and complain about this guy up here talking about God. And if you're lucky, booze and drugs will chase you back in here. And if you're not lucky, we'll look at you in the casket. Because that's the end. Jail's institutions are dead. Out of curiosity, how many people have ever been arrested? That's a shocker. Now, let me ask another silly question. How many people have ever been in an institution? Another shocker. That one, I really didn't even question, because there are so many druggy buggies in this parking lot. They should have a concession of someone that's going to detail them. And while the meeting's going on, for the owners of these places, let's clean them up. Somebody make a few bucks. I mean, come on. Well, in any case, there's three places we go. A mental institution, which, by the way, that's an institution. I don't care what they're calling it. That's a mental institution. It's an asylum. It's a funny bomb. It's a lunatic bin. It's a place for people that aren't trusted out there. And how do you know if you're one of them? Is if at 6 or 6:30 or 7 o'clock at night, wherever you are, they say, it's time to get on the band. Now, if you are being selected and it's suggested that you get on the band, because you can't be out there alone. You got supervisors, acknowledgers, check-in, timeout, pissiness. I mean, those are the people. So if any of that strikes home, you probably have a problem. Now, if you have a problem, we're going to tell you how you can fix it. And that's what we do here in this book we have. Does anyone ever hear the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? At these places, they still tell you about that? It's a great book, and it's the entire answer to whatever your problem is. I don't even care what it is. Whatever your, you know, there's 100 and something 12-step programs, because these 12 steps, my opinion, have been the solution to the 20th century, to something that was, no one had a clue about what you do with alcoholics and drug addicts. You put them in a state hospital. They get wet brain, and eventually they died after they dribble and drool and your shock treatment. And whatever the case may be, they had no idea what to do. Throw them on an island, bomb them. I mean, whatever the case may be, they had no way to even consider that you might ever, that we, not you, we might ever become productive members of society once you're in that place. So it doesn't matter how far down the scale you've gone. If you come here and you listen and you watch and you get a click, and that used to sound like a terrible word, but you know what? A click is just any group that I'm not a member of. And I came here and I needed to find a click. I needed to find a group of running partners. I needed to find some people that wanted this thing as badly as me, and I thank you, God, I found them. And we did it together. In my first meeting, someone had a T-shirt that said, I can't, we can. I've been here a lot of years. I can't do this alone. With you people, there's nothing I can't do. And that's the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, they read, well, I don't think they read it here tonight. You don't read that fifth chapter here? Did you? No. Do you? You know, you heard of it, right? You're looking at me like I'm speaking Spanish. Do you ever, that's what the fifth chapter is, how it works. You didn't read it. Oh, my God. Well, then I'll tell Russell. That's because you've been listening to him too much. That's the problem. because he thinks it's not necessary. Anyway, the fifth chapter, which they read at a lot of the meetings, you know, begins like, rarely have we seen a person fail, blah, 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 blah. And then in there, it has these things called 12 steps. Now, the 12 steps have a total of 200 words. That is such a not good idea. No, I told you, I'm a mental patient. Anybody that moves, I lose track. Doesn't even have to be a woman. A man, a goat, doesn't matter. A lot of shock treatments, really. I'm sure. Anyway, let's really get a little serious. The bottom line is, there's one thing you have to do perfectly. This is all from my sponsor to me to you. The first half of the first step is the only thing you need to do perfectly. We admitted we were powerless over, in my case, booze and drugs. That's a truth. That was true the day I got here. It's going to be true the day I leave here. A truth can never be changed and will never change. I am going to be powerless till the day I die. And all you have to think of is a lot of people that have tried after being here to prove that they were no longer powerless. And oftentimes we see them crawling back, and oftentimes you read their obituary. Once you're here, you're here. You might as well accept it and jump in and enjoy the water, because I've not seen anyone go out there after being here for a period of time and say, you know, that was all a mistake. Maybe there'll be someone, but I haven't seen it. So that's the truth. Accept it, embrace it, love it, deal with it, be happy about it. Because then the second half of that first step, that's a fact, that our lives had become unmanageable. And facts can and do change. You see, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was on Social Security disability. I'd been arrested 5 or 6 times. I was suicidal. I was in comas. I was in state mental hospitals. I got in trouble every minute of every day. So my life was obviously unmanageable. I was on disability insurance. The government was paying me not to be a part of the United States. Here, take your money. Leave us alone. After X period of time, because of you people, some incredible sponsorship, mentorship, and the fact that I was so incredibly beaten. I was so hopeless. The word hopeless doesn't properly state the way I felt. I don't even know that there's a word in the English language that really can sum up the way I felt the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's also not a word that can sum up the way I felt after the first hour when I picked up that white chip. I really realized it right then and there. There was something here. So that second half of the first step, that our lives had become unmanageable, yeah, it was unmanageable, it was unbearable, it was unthinkable. But my life today, and for many, many years, has not been unmanageable. Why is that? Well, the steps are in order. The first step we just said. The second step says we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So what happened? From this unmanageable, desperado, despicable, criminal, lowlife, and everything else about me, I come here through you people with many experiences, personal experiences, reading some books, really listening, and I found a manager. It's not really, this is not like rocket science, okay? Matter of fact, I look around here and it's not like the hotbed of intellectual pride looking through this thing. The one thing that's great about that is you don't need to be intellectual to get this thing. This is written for morons by morons. This is something that is, well, think about this. You got a Wall Street stockbroker, womanizer, dredge of society. Okay, before and while he was sober, and he hooks up with an ass doctor in Ohio, a proctologist. I could just imagine those freaking early meetings. So, Bill, what do you think? The market going higher? Up your ass. What do I know? I think about that all the time. I like to envision that. Those two guys. And they were burnt. They were fried. I mean, I go to Akron, Ohio on June 10th for AA's birthday. And if you've never been there and you're going to be sober a while, it's a great place to go. Because you get to relive the history. You're at the Cyberling Estate. You're at the table where Dr. Bob 12-stepped all the drunks. Three of us did a third step at the foot of his bed in his house, in Dr. Bob's house. And the other thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, just for the record, November of 1934 is Bill Wilson's sobriety day, which is why the gratitude month in Alcoholics Anonymous is November. However, the birth date of Alcoholics Anonymous is June 10th, 1935, because that's the day that Bill and Bob hooked up. You see, one person, Bill was sober in New York, he went through the whole freaking town and nobody killed more people alone than anybody ever. When he hooked up with Bob and they said, you know what, together we could do this thing, and that's when God let this thing explode. So God's delay isn't God's denial. It happened right on time. And that's what happens in each of our lives, right on time. We may not think it. We may say, I can't take this. And that happens to all of us. So what? So what? What do I know? You know, God sees this full puzzle. Whatever the puzzle is, he sees it. And you know what? Our only responsibility is look at today's mosaic. That's all I can handle. He knows what I can handle. What do you think that they say? One day at a time. That wasn't like something that they came up cute. That's all people like us are capable of handling is today. And sometimes even that's overwhelming. So do an afternoon or do a morning or go to sleep or whatever. But you don't, you know. Anyway, I had a pretty emotional day. I mean, a great, good emotional, you know. I think of Ray and Fred, the people that were here for me from the beginning. And Ray told me that the tears and the pains of getting sober, and while you're sober, they turn into tears of joy. And that's what's happened to me today. From early morning until right now at this restaurant we just were at, until right here and right now. The abundance, the vessel that God has given, it overflows. And the reason it overflows is because we're all given a reason for being here. And it's not to get sober and get houses and cars, although there's nothing wrong with that. It's to get sober and then find someone that needs this gift. And if I have my hand in the gutter trying to pick somebody up, I'm ensuring myself of not ending up back in that gutter. And today I had three gutter stories. Okay, and a bunch of other great stories, but three gutter stories. So, man, just you give to get. My sponsors taught me that. I love to give, and I love to watch what happens when they get it. Because when they do, that's a joy you can't even believe. Okay, now, we don't demand you believe in anything when you come in at all. Okay, and I'm not going to read or recreate what it says in the book, because that's why you get a sponsor, okay, to help you go through the book. And what's a sponsor? It's not a marriage counselor. It's not a financial advisor. It's not someone for any other purpose, but someone who seems to have a grasp on life, who you see in some meetings, you like the way he or she sounds, and you get their number, and you call them, and their job is to help you through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. No more and no less. That's it. So early on, you got to understand, like I said, I was pretty rough when I got here. And I walked into my first meeting, and it happened to have been an NA meeting. It was the only NA meeting in Broward County. And someone had a T-shirt on, and it said, I can't, we can. That little T-shirt changed the direction of my life. And then I was getting up to leave that meeting, and I told the story last week, and in walked a guy from my neighborhood in New York. And we had gotten high together. And he had been asked to be the speaker that night. Now, you know, I am so convinced, the longer I'm here, that life is about seconds and inches. And that's my second step. See that I can't write these things off any longer as coincidental. My God has skin on, and it's you people. Okay, so the fact that on February 12th, 1980, I'm walking out of this Lutheran ministry at 8:28 p.m. and Mark's walking in and blah, 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 and he was the prearranged speaker that night, and we're 1,200 miles from home, and you have two Jewish alcoholic drug addicts in a Lutheran ministry in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I'm walking out to continue killing myself, and he's walking in to share the 6 months that he had of sobriety. Well, that seems a little beyond coincidental. I don't care what kind of gambler you are. You can't set the odds on something like that. It's not possible. Not humanly possible. And that's been my story. Not humanly possible situations occurring. And they continue to occur. And today they occur more because my eyes are wide open. My eyes are so wide open today. And I embrace all of it. I look at it. I watch it. I had dinner with three or four very, very long-term and close friends for years and years and years. And we watched and we helped each other have the miracle together. And Annie, happy anniversary. And so if you're here and you're really sick and tired of being sick and tired, stick around. They used to say go to 90 meetings in 90 days. If you don't like where you're at, we'll refund your 90 days of misery. I don't hear that much anymore, but I still suggest it. Okay, if they tell you if 90 days too much, go to a meeting a day, bullshit. 90 days too much, you're probably not finished. Go out and come back when 90 days isn't that too much. I get to it. My father, God rest his soul, was my greatest hero in my whole life. And he never gave up on me. And I did everything in the world to make him give up on me. And I abused him and I stole from him and I robbed his cab. He was a cab driver and I would drive the cab and I would abuse my mom and I would steal money. Not abuse her physically, I'd steal money. They had this big silver dollar collection, which today I probably could have retired 300 years over. But the silver dollar collection went $1 at a time to Danny Cooper on 116th Street, Atlantic Avenue. That's where the silver dollar collection is. Okay? And I abused them so badly. And it didn't matter because I needed to do it. I didn't care who you were. It was upbringing, it was outgoing. Anyway, so I finally get down here and I get sober in February of 1980. And my dad got sick on his 65th birthday, which was November of 79. And so my whole first 6 months of sobriety, he was wasting away from cancer. A guy that just kept putting everything off to when I retire and my mom will retire, you know, my mom was gonna retire. They were gonna travel the country. Well, that was his plan. It wasn't God's plan. Because we never know how many days we have. So if there's any suggestion I have, if you're going to stay sober, don't put things off. I play every day out like it's going to be my last, and one day I'll be right. And that's—I don't even say that kidding. I mean that 1,000,000% sincerely. Because what happened to my dad, I'm sober 6 months, and I'm flying up to New York now. He's wasting away. And I'm in his bedroom. And I'm trying to tell him 6 months worth of what I learned here in Alcoholics Anonymous about this guy who's withering away. And I said, Dad, easy does it. He didn't like that too much. But we're standing up by his dresser and I say, Dad, this too shall pass. But that sort of put him over the edge. And he banged his fist on the dresser. And he said something that I've never forgotten. He said, Paul, I'm dying. I lived a good life. Are you still going to your meetings? In 6 months, you people did more to me, visibly to him, than any mental hospital, methadone program, drug treatment center, arrest, suicide, coma, than anything. And in 6 months, he saw it. So, of course, I said yes, and that's why I know today, because he's gone since August of 1980. He only shared 6 months of my journey with me, but I know today he's here with me. I know that. There's no maybes about it, because he smiles while I smile. I have a den here in my house, and I have a painting right over my computer. My sister, who's an artist, and she painted a picture of my dad from right in 79, right before he got sick. And that's what I look at every morning while I'm reading and meditating and praying. So I know that he knows that I know that he knows that he did his job. He's gone. He had a great life, like he told me, and I'm here to do my part. And so you come here, and you get sober, you get a little hope, and that's really what we sell here. We sell hope. The week before my father died, he was getting very sick. And by the way, I didn't come here, and when I saw Mark and said, oh, wow, thank you, there must be a God, I found God. That wasn't my story. For a long time in this program, I didn't know if I was an agnostic or an atheist, and I found out I was an ignoramus. I really thought that I knew something. You know, I thought I knew all the answers, and you couldn't tell me anything. Matter of fact, for a long, long time, after I was sober, someone would start telling me something. Before they finished saying it, I would say, I know. I know. Of course I know that. And I might not even have a clue what you were talking about. Just that I knew that you knew that I knew. So the key is that the week before my father died, he was having a tough time coming to the phone. And the only time that I wanted to get loaded since I'd been in Alcoholics Anonymous was in August of 1980. It was a Thursday night. It was my home group, the Express Group. And we met by Fort Lauderdale Airport. And there was a beginner's meeting and there was a second meeting. And I went there because it was still light time. And in August, I wanted to find some gutter rats so I could go find some stuff, go to a hotel, and kill myself. And that's really what I was doing. But the gutter rats that I hung out with didn't come out till nighttime. So I went to this AA beginner's meeting just to let them know thanks, but no thanks. And I walked into the beginner's meeting, and it came my turn to share, and I said, listen, I want to thank you all. It's been great. But if I ever need you, I'll come back. I'm leaving after this to go get shit-faced. They closed the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Now, here was a little coincidental thing. Maybe you could help me with this one. At the minute that I'm walking out, in walks the guy Curtis, who took me to my first meeting, which we'll talk about in later future weeks. And he was sober 4 years or so at the time. And the chairperson for that second meeting, the speaker meeting, didn't show up. So they asked Curtis to chair the meeting. At the exact minute that I'm leaving to go get shit-faced, Curtis turns to me and says, Paul, do you want to speak tonight? Now, here's the quandary. You come in here and they tell you never say no to an AA request. I'm going to get whacked, but he tells me to speak. He asked me, so anyway, I say yes. I sat up at the front of the room. The only time I consciously, in Alcoholics Anonymous, didn't say one thing that was true. I didn't give a drunk log. I didn't give a drug log. I gave a God a log of a God that I didn't believe in. I talked about what God has done and how he's done. I mean, whatever I said, it could have been one of the greatest fantasy talks in the world because there wasn't anything coming from me. Somewhere in the middle of that talk, the obsession to use and drink had left. We went out to eat. I went home that night, and I took a shower late at night, 1 a.m. And I'm in the shower, and I used to pray at this time with my hands against the wall, you know, a comfortable position, like you're being frisked with the water. No, nobody was telling me about knees or anything, you know, just my head against the wall, and the water's coming down. And I would say these things to God, you know, I didn't believe it, but I was talking to a lot of stupid talking in my life anyway. So, but this night, on August 29th, 1980, I simply said, God, about my father, thy will be done. I didn't say find a cure for cancer. I didn't say ease his pain. I didn't say take him out of this earth so he could, you know, be out of this situation. I simply said, thy will be done. That was 1:30 in the morning. My mom, may she rest in peace, called me at 3 o'clock in the morning that my father had died. Now, I didn't do backflips and say, oh, thank you, God, I found God, my father's dead. But I'm going to tell you what did happen. As I was on the plane the next morning flying up to the funeral, I realized that there's some power that is so overwhelming that the only reason you wouldn't want more of it is if you don't give yourself enough of a chance to realize the power of it. And I realized through situations like that the enormity of what unlimited power means. I can't describe to you this power. It's out of the realm of any human being's descriptive abilities. All power means just that, all power. He can settle out anything, no matter what it is, terminal disease, terminal relationship, IRS liens, bankruptcies, arrests, divorces, loss of houses, loss of spouses, and those were all in sobriety for me. Because, you know, if you come here and you get sober, you're blessed enough to get sober, and you stay sober for any period of time, life's going to happen. You don't skip up the 12 golden steps of life and never experience a negative emotion. I've been here over half my life. I got sober 2 months before my 32nd birthday. And for you women, I know it's going to be tough to realize, Annie, I'm going to be 67 next month. No smattering of applause. However, we do have a private text number for you girls. My wife came and joined us for dinner, and I have the best woman on the planet. 22 years. Can you believe this? And everybody she meets, wherever it is, whether it's here at a meeting or friends here or in New York. 2 weeks ago, we're in New York, we get off the plane, and we're coming down off the plane, and there's a girl I know, and Sandra's right behind me, and the girl looks at me and says, is that your wife? I said, yeah. She goes to Sandra, never met her before. She says, how do you do it? That's the opening line to my wife. How do you do it? Everybody ever heard of Albert Einstein? Okay. Just for the record, even though AA thinks we did everything you ever hear here, we did it. Well, the definition of insanity, how many people have heard that? We know what it is? Doing the same thing and expecting different results. So everybody says, wow, that's the AA saying. Wrong. Albert Einstein, one of the greatest minds in the history of this world, he said that. He also said you can't fix the mind, you can't fix a situation with the same mind that got you into the situation. That's insanity. So sit here and say, okay, let's see, I've been in 17 of these rehabs. I lost 3 families. I have 4 warrants hanging over my head, and I'm an escaped convict. But let me try to figure this out right now. I mean, really, we got to ask for some help, man. And the only thing I can say is thank God we're not all sick at the same time. You know, that's the other thing. Now, let's talk a little about denial. We've all heard about denial. Many of you have probably experienced it. Come here, you get sober for a while, you go out, and, you know, like I said before, trying to prove us wrong. Well, early in my... Someone crying, or is that a dog?
A baby.
A baby? I'm not going to get another paternity suit after this. It's okay, I got some cash today, but see, my attorney is in the fourth row. This is like, to me, it happened early on when I had a few years, and it's still perhaps the greatest story of denial and summation of this disease than any I've ever heard or seen. Here's what it is. The first guy I ever sponsored in AA was this guy, Richie Pendergar, God rest his soul. And he was a big guy from New York, you know, Staten Island, that big, big guy. His nickname was the Bear, okay? And he was big, and he just had the toughest time getting sober. But we would pick him up, and we'd bring him to meetings. So we had this meeting in Margate on a Wednesday night, and this guy, Steve, who I sponsored, went to pick him up on a Wednesday night to bring him to the meeting. And I was already in the meeting. I'm in the meeting. Steve comes running in, and he says, Paul, Richie's unconscious in the car. He says, I picked him up on Commercial Boulevard. He was perfect. Now I can't move him. He's out completely. So I go out, and I'm smacking him. He's not moving. So I jump in the car with Steve. Let's go to Margate Regional Hospital. This was in Margate. It was before, it's Northwest or whatever it is today, but on 441. We run in, we go to the emergency room, we run in. I love stuff like that. I love calamity, you know. Oh, we got someone overdose here in the car. Quick, come out, come back. So they run out with the gurneys and the thing, and they get him, and they take him into the emergency room. And Steve and I are sitting out here, you know, talking. After X period of time, the nurse comes out and she says, look, will one of you come in here just in case Richie comes too, so he'll see a familiar face, you know, so he won't, like, you know, because he's that big. I said, sure, you know, I immediately, yeah, I'm in that emergency room. Yeah, let's do it. So I'm sitting there now. Keep this in mind. They now have him with tubes in his body. His sweater is cut off. He's laying on the gurney. He's still totally unconscious. Now, one of my greatest dreams was being able to smack the shit out of Richard. And I did. I mean, he's on the gurney. Richard, get up! I mean, I'm tattooing him. And he's not moving. Richie, you're in the hospital. You're bound. At some point in time, after X period of time, with tubes in his arms, he comes to an eighth of an inch worth, and he opens his right eye. A little bit, you know, not like just, he opens it a little bit enough to see me. And he looks at me, automatic response. He didn't have to think about this response. Please keep in mind, he's laying on a gurney, tubes in him, his sweater is cut off, the IV is coming down. He sees my face and he says, Paulie, I swear I didn't say nothing. On the freaking gurney, unconscious in a hospital. That's what we do. Richie got sober for a while, and then he got unsober for a while, and I happened to be a pallbearer at his funeral in Staten Island, New York, maybe 10 years ago, and his brother is now sober in Broward County, 20-something years. We don't know where that hand plays out. So if you're here, stay. You know, why would you want to test that out? So I just never forgot that story. And, you know, another cute story, which I find cute, and I didn't invent any of these stories. I heard them or saw them. We were at a mental hospital. I wasn't a resident. I was actually bringing a meeting. Well, the first time I brought a meeting to South Florida State Hospital, when I had 6 or 9 months before they closed it, was a sexual offenders unit out there. And Rachel, come on. I was never a resident. I just was kidding. So anyway, so Big Robert, who brought me out there, there's a triple locked door to get in, and I get through the third door, and he walks the other way and says, it's the only way we can get you here. And that was after I was 6 months sober. But here's what happened. You just caught that, right? Sometimes you got to follow the bouncing ball, right, Mitch? No. I had to go back. I had a lot of shock treatments. But you have to undo the shock treatments 1 year at a time. We're in Coral Ridge Psychiatric Hospital. We brought a meeting in there. And, you know, they're upstairs. And this was also a very, very nervous place. And they're sitting there in the meeting, and I'm there with Joe, who's my first sponsor. And there's some guy sitting there, and he's been in a million of these places. And we're talking to him, and we say, why don't you just get off the methadone? And then maybe you can get clean, stop drinking, and maybe your life will get better. And maybe you'll get your job back and get your wife back and get your house back and everything will be fine. And he looked at us and he says, you know what? As soon as I get my wife back and as soon as I get my house back and as soon as my kids are talking to me and as soon as I get my job back, that's when I'm going to stop drinking and I'm going to stop using. And we then looked at him, and this was definitely from God, nothing that either of us thought of. And we said the following. What that reminds me of is a big executive sitting in a big office, and he has a big circular fan. You've all seen those fans going around? And he's got stacks of paper all over the desk. And so obviously the fan is going this way, and it's blowing the stacks off as it's getting to each stack. He's at the front of the deck picking them up and restacking them. Someone walks into his office and watches this for a couple of minutes and says, realizes, what is this guy? Is he nuts? And looks at him and says, why don't you unplug the fan? He says, yeah, I'm going to unplug the fan as soon as I stack the papers up. That's what happens if you don't stop drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous. You start thinking that way. And all of your thinking becomes skewed. Because enough booze and drugs in the body of anybody is going to just send you to a place of mental and physical incomprehensibility. And we do the opposite here. We sell you to a place of hope, joy, passion, and love. I would say that sounded like Billy Graham when I said that. Hope, joy, passion, and love. Hope, joy. Ray Allen, my sponsor. God rest his soul. I went through depression at different times of my sobriety, just like Bill Wilson. It's part of the deal. Some people have it. You don't have it. Doesn't matter. But it's just another disease. And because I do all my diseases to the max, I was sober and wanted to kill myself. 7, 8 years sober. My whole world had exploded again. And so I would come to meetings, and I would just sit there and, when people would be anniversaries, I would go like this. And Ray Allen would look at me. I thank you, God. And he would say, he would give me clapping lessons. No, he would look at me right at the 101 Club at that top table and he'd say, enthusiasm. Ray, what are you talking? Leave me alone. I'm here. What do you want from me? Enthusiasm. And then he explained to me, enthusiasm comes from the Latin enthos, which means of the spirit. And we come here and our spirits are dead. And through the involvement and active caring of other members of Alcoholics Anonymous, our spirits awaken. And as our spirits awaken, we're able to touch the spirits of others. Now, how does Beach Bump from New York, who couldn't hold a job, knew all of this Latin? I never figured out. But the fact of the matter is, he was the happiest guy I ever met in my entire life. In my entire life. His sobriety date was March 23rd, 1956. In New York City, he was the chairman of Bill Wilson's gratitude dinner. When he talked about Bill, it was Bill. Wasn't like Bill Schwartz, it was Bill Wilson. And Ray would tell me about those gratitude dinners and Ebby, who you read about in our literature, and he would talk and say, yeah, Ebby would come in drunk, that little rascal. I love when Ray would say that. And I would have to walk him outside and tell him, Ray, this is Bill's night. I mean, come on, what are you kidding me? They get that close to something that changed the face of the world? I love that. And I can't get enough of this. So, is that my child? Oh, I'll be, Daddy will be home soon. Tell one more little story, and then we got a lot of weeks left, so we'll fill in the blanks if anybody's left. Yeah. Hopefully. Tell Russell to cancel the Wednesday night meeting and send them in. Really, what are you going to waste? Two trips. 7 or 8 years ago, they had the Super Bowl in New Orleans, Louisiana. And I've done many things since I'm sober. Some people have many jobs. I've had many careers. I mean, I went from disability insurance, and I've had 20, 30 different, totally unrelated careers, which we'll get into as the steps continue. So in this particular time, I was into sports memorabilia and sports management, and I went to 10 Super Bowls as a result of that. But I'm at the Super Bowl in New Orleans, Louisiana. And we're doing stuff. I was there with some people I knew, you know, celebrities. And it's halftime of the Super Bowl. Is that the medication bell?
That's Hollywood.
That's Hollywood, all right. So it's the halftime of the Super Bowl, and I get a phone call on my cell phone, and I pick up the phone, and it's my best friend in sobriety, Billy Maron's wife. Billy had 18 years sober. His sobriety date was March 1981. He was 1 year behind and 1 month behind me. We did this deal together for 18 years. He got very successful. He moved to Hong Kong. He got into the antique watch business. He made millions upon millions of dollars. And he forgot. So whatever you're doing, don't let what's happening to you, don't put it in front of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that'll be the second thing that you lose. The first thing that Billy lost was his sobriety. And he tried to get back, and he came back from Hong Kong, he went to LA, and he got sober, he tried. It was very difficult, because he was a hope-to-die alcoholic dope fiend just like me. Nicest guy in the world. Billy, after trying to get back, after having had a year back, at halftime of the Super Bowl in New Orleans, Louisiana, I get the phone call that Billy Maron overdosed in California. So my life went from the toilet bowl to the Super Bowl, and Billy Maron is dead. Man, I don't know. I think it's pretty cool being on this side of the grass, which is why every morning I jump out of bed, because I did a survey. 95% of everyone who dies lying down. So I jumped the hell up. Let's get the party started. Thanks for listening.